Hello and welcome to Business Daily from the BBC World Service, the business podcast which brings you the trends, the money and the people who make the world and its money go round. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Looking for inspiring stories? Listen to the EY Leading Into Tomorrow podcast. It features compelling stories from leaders across government and the public sector who've transformed their organisations and services. From the impact of grants to how digital innovation is reshaping affordable childcare, you'll get actionable insights and ideas that can be used around the world. Download Leading Into Tomorrow by EY wherever you get your podcasts.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Business Daily from the BBC World Service. I'm Ed Butler. Today, I'm here in Park City, Utah, up in the American Rockies, hearing from entrepreneurs and experts in the business of commercial space exploration. And yes, it really can be a business.
We can see the advantages, see the opportunities, and really start the industrialization of space and expanding human society to new places.
There's even money to be made collecting space junk these days.
I call it cosmic beachcombing. You go up there, and I'm going to put it into a space junkyard, and this is more manufacturing in space.
Cashing in on the cosmos. That's Business Daily from the BBC. It's a chilly and a bit of a perilous journey through deep snow up to the Future in Review conference hall here in Park City, Utah. We're some 2,500 metres up in the Rocky Mountains right now, with spectacular views in front of me of the pine forests lining the dramatic ski slopes they have here. The trees are heaving with last night's fresh snow shower, but some of the delegates at this future-facing technology conference have their eyes cast rather more upwards, the skies and beyond. The massive economic potential, they say, that a whole range of businesses are seeing beyond our own planet.
We should be in space within weeks, not months, and then we'll be in space with myself in months, not years, and then we'll be in space with people not too long after that. So we've got a very, very exciting couple of months ahead.
The words there of Richard Branson. He's the British space tourism pioneer, speaking to CNBC just a few days ago. He's describing the imminent launch of his Virgin Galactic near-orbit space flights. The going rate to board one of these will be about $250,000, we're told, although he hopes the price could soon fall. Other firms are in this market too, and Ariel Ekblor from MIT reckons that tourism is going to be what drives the expansion of commercial space exploration in the near future. Infrastructure in near orbit is going to be needed for this. At her space exploration initiative in Boston, she's been designing next-generation floating space homes to receive astronautical pleasure seekers.
The goal was to presage and predict for the waves of space tourists that we would love to see in orbit, low Earth orbit around the Earth. And how can you have architecture that scales with those people coming into orbit? So rather than a custom-built prefabbed module like what we have on the International Space Station, can you have small tiles that pack flat, something like IKEA furniture, pack flat in the rocket on their trip to orbit? Once they're released in zero gravity, they passively swirl around each other and click, 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 click in together and self-assemble into something like a geodesic dome, a Buckminster Fullerene shape, a torus, any number of different shapes that are practical for space exploration.
I saw one of those. You had a video earlier. So it was basically a multiple flat-sided, it looked like a large ball that were just going to click into space. Now, this would be ultimately, what, a space hotel of some form?
Absolutely. And so we're looking at it for the future of modular, reconfigurable space architecture. I think gone are the days of completely prefab, single-use architecture. We want to be able to say where you had a window yesterday, make it an airlock or a bonding port tomorrow. And so with a modular space architecture design, you can depressurize the structure, pop a tile off, and pop one right back on, kind of like Legos for space. The big question for the industry right now is what are the business models and the markets that will be able to support exploration beyond low Earth orbit to the moon and ultimately to Mars. But right now, the market that we're looking at in the near term is that space tourism market. So being able to support flexible habitats in orbit around the Earth and then eventually have them also be able to come down to a surface like the moon and be snapped and more easily assembled on the surface of a gravity body as well. So they're dual purpose.
So that space hotel we've just envisaged, the self-assembly space hotel, how near term do you think, I suppose, you know, the order hasn't yet come in, but how near term do you think that could be, given that we are now seeing space tourism begin?
This is a great question. So I can say from the research standpoint, we're pushing very hard. We'd love to see this realized, at least in perhaps a scaled down test, a prototype test within the next 5 to 10 years. We think it's feasible. The technology is there. The real question is the access up to orbit and some of the guidance and navigation control systems to make sure that it works. In terms of the timeline for when it'll be inhabited by humans as a space hotel, thinking maybe 10, 15 years. And really that answer depends on the success of enterprises like Virgin Galactic, Blue Origin, perhaps even SpaceX as they're getting into the space tourist business. Can they supply the hotel guests for us if we have this module that's available in orbit?
So that's space tourist infrastructure. But the reality is that most near-term commercial opportunities beyond depositing yet more satellites into orbit is likely to come from unmanned activity, robots doing stuff. Dennis Bushnell is one of the world's leading lights in this whole field. As NASA's veteran chief scientist, he spent years paving the way for the private sector explosion that we're seeing in space at the moment. And he's pretty clear where the low-hanging space fruit is located.
Due to the cheaper access, you can now do space manufacturing. There are excellent business plans for things like fiber optics and some crystals and other things. The problem has been the cost of getting up and down and the regularity of getting up and down. And as we go to renewable rockets, space manufacturing becomes very viable.
Why do you want to manufacture in space? Why is that an advantage?
Because there are certain properties of the materials and the objects that I just described, which are far better quality.
So you're going up into space and creating little factories up there for these things?
Yes. Yes. Another thing that we need to do, which we can make money on, is space debris. Space debris is getting really serious. We're putting up a huge number of low LEO satellites now to do Earth observing and high-speed internet, a large number of them. So the space debris is going to get worse.
Because there's a lot of defunct satellites up there.
There's several million particles up there down to the size of a screw and anything bigger. And there's all kinds of scenarios that are getting closer to us that will wipe out the access to space capability because things will get razored on the way up. It turns out that the major problem with space debris is that everything put up in space is legally owned by somebody. And therefore, every screw up there is owned by somebody, and you have to get a legal release from them before you touch it. So that has to be worked through. I assume it will be. Okay, then there's what would he do? And I call it cosmic beachcombing. And so what you do is you go up there with an electromagnetic tether, which you energize either with our nuclear battery or with solar. You can now maneuver all around without expelling fuel.
And you're just sucking in by magnetic force all of the metal objects around.
I am collecting the stuff, and I'm going to put it into a space junkyard, and this is more manufacturing in space.
Space scrap.
There's an awful lot of high-quality aluminum in all this stuff, okay, and all kinds of other stuff. So, and the space station, instead of deorbiting it due time and burning it up, it goes into the space junkyard to be remanufactured and reused.
NASA Chief Scientist Dennis Bushnell. Beyond refuse collection, there is another area that's become a hot topic in space commerce. That's mining. Chris Lewicki is the founder and CEO of the US-based firm Planetary Resources, one of the world's first and leading prospective space miners.
In the last decade, we've seen tremendous progress, not just in the topic and environment around space mining, but in the development of outer space in general. We now have rockets that we can reuse. We've been to all the planets in the solar system. We're finding moons in other solar systems. We've landed on comets, brought back samples from asteroids, roved around on their surfaces. And I think the big shift is we are passing a tipping point where there is more private money being invested in space exploration and development than public money. The public money certainly paved the way, as it almost always does. And with those points of insight, the exploration back from the first explorers, so to speak, we can see the advantages, see the opportunities, and really start the industrialization of space and expanding human society to new places.
What are you going to mine?
From a space mining standpoint, we are today focused on those resources that you can use in space so that you don't have to bring them with you. And as in all things in transportation, you don't want heavy baggage. You don't want to be paying for shipping very expensive, heavy things. You want to bring as little with you as possible and get all those things on site.
H2O is the main one, right? Water, I mean, or ice in the form of the way you find it on asteroids. That was the first target you spoke to me about.
Yeah, water is very likely the catalyst to opening up the space age for you and I. Water can, in the form of H2O, hydrogen and oxygen, be split and made into rocket fuel. It's the fuel that rockets run on right now. So the ability to take that rocket that got you from the surface of the Earth to Earth orbit and top it off and take it farther makes that supply chain a lot easier and scalable to like quantities that we can't even imagine. Millions of people living and working in space instead of a half dozen.
I can get the idea here, because obviously a potential service station in space or a gas station in space for all of these passing spaceships would be great. But I do see a problem in the medium term, surely, because we talked about the economics. Rockets are now going up and down from Earth far cheaper than they used to, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the costs of fuel as a proportion of an Elon Musk SpaceX rocket kind of shooting up space is actually only a tiny fraction of the cost of the overall mission. Mm-hmm. So Is fuel really the deliverable that everyone is waiting for?
Well, absolutely. What we will find over time is those very cheap rockets are going to get extraordinarily efficient at going from the surface of the Earth just into space, into Earth orbit. And from that point, we'll have a different type of vehicle, your taxi or your tug, that never has to feel the weight of gravity, never has to feel the force of the atmosphere.
It'll be permanently in space.
It'll be permanently in space, and it'll be that shuttle that takes you from where the rocket dropped you off to the next point. And sometimes you'll fuel that shuttle from the surface of the Earth, but maybe when that shuttle gets out to geosynchronous orbit or farther out from the moon, you'll fill that with resources from asteroids.
But aren't you going to need a space colony first? I mean, or at least an active sort of industry and a population up there, or I don't know, some kind of infrastructure before you can even begin to start arguing for the benefits of space mining.
Well, this is what is the challenge in the business of space.
Chicken and the egg.
Yeah. What is the series of stepping stones that sustainably gets this going? So you have to, like you said, make the economics of it. It so happens that these economics are kind of the economics of large industrial projects. They're multi-billion-dollar projects, decades in length, but similarly speaking, they have the opportunity for hundreds of billions, if not trillions, in revenue and value creation. And it's kind of thinking about, we make computers so cheap, how are we ever going to make money on computers? And of course, there's not a part of our lives that are not touched by computers today. So space is kind of the next version of that.
Quick question, though. If you go up, you've got your asteroid in your sights, and you go up and you land on it to prospect, and you come back and go, yes, It's got all of the things we wanted, H2O and loads more besides. But hasn't it gone by then? And it's not going to be back for several decades.
That is one of the challenges of working with asteroids as opposed to the moon or Mars. And this is part of the economics of space mining. We see similar challenges in remote activities in the tundra, where the roads literally freeze over and you have to work with the seasons. So with asteroids, one of the challenges is to work with the seasons of their orbits. So if it were easy, it would already be done. And these are the things that we're exploring to find the next solution for.
How soon will this happen?
It's happening now.
But how soon are you going to have a probe starting to prospect on a particular asteroid?
The first commercial resource exploration mission is probably still 4 or 5 years away. It's a matter of the funding for doing these things. NASA does billion-dollar missions. The commercial sector still needs about $100 million to do these types of projects. So it's a financing challenge, as many things are. But 5 years from now, we can tell you which is the first place in the solar system that will be the source of these resources.
And you think the finance is there?
Yes, absolutely. $100 million projects are a dime a dozen around the world. But 5 years away from knowing where the mine is, and probably 5 years after that from starting the very first small-scale mining.
Chris Lewicki here on Business Daily from the BBC. So then, we've discussed space tourists, space factories, mining, even automated space refuse collection. But where's the magic in all of this? Where are the space colonies full of people, for example? The kind that entrepreneur Elon Musk has long suggested we should be building on Mars. Well, the truth is, according to Ariel Ekblor, there remain many problems to having humans living long-term in space.
This is one of the questions that we need to solve as humanity, which is how can our bodies acclimate to the environment of zero gravity? Maybe it's through the addition of artificial gravity, so rotating space habitats that provide a sense of force that allow you to simulate gravity better for your bones, better for your eye health, better for your organ health. And we're looking at things like astronaut mental health. We're looking at things like social robot companions. Can robot companions provide some of the comfort that you would usually have from, say, a family member at home that can't come with you on a deep, long-duration space mission? Also looking at wearables for developing and monitoring astronaut biometrics, understanding the physiological changes that they're undergoing in orbit. And of course, on this, we build on the shoulders of the incredible work that's been done by NASA and other groups over the years to understand and study the effects on the human body in zero gravity, in microgravity.
So what is the time frame for all of this then? NASA's Dennis Bushnell expects the start of space mining and factories within perhaps 10 years, although he warns, for all the talk of a new frontier and new opportunities, the economic viability of it all remains uncertain.
Everything is on roller skates. The technologies are on roller skates, okay, changing rapidly. The opportunities are on roller skates. As we learn more, we determine what we really need or don't need, okay? And the competition changes because the technology changes, okay? So this is a very vibrant and interesting, as in may you live in interesting times.
Which basically means anyone making a forecast is not to be trusted just yet because it could change in the next year.
Forecasts, particularly business forecasts, are generally based on data. And the amount of actual real raw data about some of these things, particularly the data on the competitions from Earth and other things, are yet to be obtained.
Quite. NASA's chief scientist Dennis Bushnell on the prospects for commercial space adventure. And that's it for this edition of Business Daily. I will be back with more future tech from the Future in Review conference here in Utah in tomorrow's program. Till then, folks, keep your feet on the ground, but keep reaching for the stars.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Looking for inspiring stories? Listen to the EY Leading Into Tomorrow podcast It features compelling stories from leaders across government and the public sector who've transformed their organizations and services. From the impact of grants to how digital innovation is reshaping affordable childcare, you'll get actionable insights and ideas that can be used around the world. Download Leading Into Tomorrow by EY wherever you get your podcasts.